Welcome to Changing the Narrative with Dina Eccles. I've truly grown to love the technology that allows these important conversations to happen and to be shared. My guest today is great-grandmother Mary Lyons, an Ojibwe elder, author, wisdom keeper, and humanitarian from Lakeville, Minnesota. I've been following Mary on Facebook, and I've appreciated her wit and wisdom, and I'm thrilled to have her today in conversation. As Minnesota faces the harsh realities of unchecked militarism, as human beings are ripped from their families and friends, as children are left alone, and the murderer of Rene Good continues to walk free, we're faced with the questions of who are we and who will we be? Indigenous people and other marginalized people have had this fight always, and now it's time for all of us to learn how to survive and how to flourish in the midst of incredible inhumanity. To that end, I'm very grateful for the company today of great-grandmother Mary Lyons. Thank you for agreeing to have this conversation today.
Oh, me good. Thank you. You know, it's an honor. It's an honor to be in this space and that there, you know, I've been doing a lot of what we're doing here on just having conversations and this stuff and trying to get boots on the ground, you know, words from the people that are locked in this environment, and how do we get the truth as we see it out there, and how do we make sense of it? So I'm very honored to be in this space, and thank you for asking me to come on.
Yeah, so like, where would you like to begin?
Oh my gosh. You know, I think, you know, when you invited me on in that there, and, you know, I had put several posts out because normally I don't really go into a length about myself and how I'm feeling, because I'm a knowledge holder and wisdom keeper, you know, and I work with the seven regions of the world and a lot of women of sobriety and the wellness of individuals and out there. So this isn't anything new that happened in Minnesota. Everybody
right.
goes, oh my gosh, you know, it's a big fear factor and this stuff. But I think a lot of times too, you know, that people that are really feeling the strain and the real negative impact of it are really suppressed memories from the past that are awakening up. And some of them don't even realize that they have them. Some of these memories could be, you know, memory awakenings from their ancestral knowledge from prior and this stuff. So that's what I really want to talk about is, you know, we can't really give credit to the ignorance that surrounds us. Because if we do, you know, we just feed in that darkness. It's like putting over power to a power plant, you know, a little battery and this stuff, you know. I don't even hate using batteries, but anything that gives out any type of power, you don't want to supply it with more power. And you do that by reflecting the same behaviors that is being thrown at you.
Correct.
You know, but it's okay to identify what your feelings are, because a lot of times it's really not that person, he or she makes me so mad. You have to start identifying their behaviors. And beyond their behaviors, you have to kind of start walking back into their path to see and try to figure out. That's why I always say step back from the chaos and look around you, because, you know, hurt people hurt people. And, you know, they wear their wounds famously out in the open. And when anybody tries to help them out, they just re-rip the bandages off because they're so comfortable being in the space that pretty much helped them survive throughout this time, you know, of hurt. And when I say that, I think people really forget about, you know, and I think that really bothers the indigenous people of the lands when they go, you know, these illegals that are coming up. In our mind, we're thinking, now, wait a minute. These are our territories. These are our gardens that Creator had gifted us and said, take care of these lands and out there. And then we had people coming into the lands and out there and pushing forth and doing what they had to do. We could walk that scenario with a knockdown drag of who's right and who's wrong. We could go into that, or we could look at the realities of it. Because the reality is, for the indigenous people, the organic lifestyles, that we come as caretakers, we don't come as landlords.
Wow.
And when individuals started coming onto our lands hundreds of years ago. They've already had a breeding of what their home life was about. And their home life really wasn't any different of ours because they were pushed out of their homelands because they were suppressed from being a family unit and being happy and out there. There was always somebody that was kind of wanting to conquer and be disruptive or whatever in me. So that's the way we always try to remind people, you know, when, and I will say it, some people go, those darn white people or those darn black people or those darn Indian, you know, they really identify color like it's just some deck of cards you're tossing around randomly and you shuffle back up and then you start seeing it again. Well, you can usually tell when people do that, that's really a strong identification from where their pain is at. Because can you imagine? Oh, they don't know how to express their love. And I can even go back into the womb. You know, if the fetus is going and you have all this data that's within the woman that there and it's being planted into your little memory banks and out there, and if she's not happy or there's depression, could be really happy, could be a rough family, but she has this depression that sometimes mothers have in out there. So they adapt that's first teaching in this stuff and they can't really identify with that. And you know, and if the child comes out, you know, there's scenarios, you know, and the mom is having all these baby blues and this stuff, and she just can't get her stuff together, but it doesn't mean she doesn't love you. It's just that first connection isn't there. So you've already created an absent space. And how do I fill this absent space? Well, we can go further in out there of listening to arguing, and you're put here and you're put there, and you're doing anything for attention. And when you're crying and you're getting other people upset, you know, you might be either soothed or you might be left there. Or a lot of times, what people don't like to think about it is a lot of babies are abused because of displaced anger within whoever that caregiver is at that particular time because they don't know how to turn the noise off. So they figure if they can whack the baby or what it is. So this memory building that is constantly happening starts to become real familiar. So in order, in a way that I can seek and get attention, is to get that negative attention back and have that familiar be more hospitable to me. So that's why some people can just go, you have to look at them and they're going, oh my God, how can they be so cruel? And that's why we say you cannot feed, and I don't even like to think of it as an illness. I just think it's a memory that they don't know how to comfort or to identify with. And that's my way of really holding the balance because it's easy to say, you know, God, I hate these people or I hate this and that there. So what happens is you start mirroring their behaviors and you start mirroring their energy, and there's no win-win. There's no win-win on this. So that's why you say, you know, you gotta step back and look at the chaos because the majority of time, the actual events that are happening in this chaos, there's something bigger that's going on in the exterior world. You know, there's this diversion that's going on, and there's this manipulation that could be happening, and you have to see what's happening on that other side, why there is so much silliness that is put onto this one conflict. So here in Minnesota, you know, it happened, you know, many times with Indigenous people, with the Removal Act, you know, all the way for placement on reservations. You know, we even had the CC camps up in northern Minnesota. You know, over in Little Falls, we had the trains from New York and out there with a lot of the people that came in and were surrounded, and it came to the orphanages there. I mean, so we really have this blended history, right? And within this history too of Minnesota, you know, people really make fun of, oh, Minnesota. It's that dialect is with a Dakota slang and also with that European, when a lot of the Norwegians or the Swedes or whoever was that particular group of people that came over to the free world to live, and they're parents of them didn't survive, so they took the children and they put them on orphan chains and shipped them out to California. And a lot of them ended up in Little Falls, Minnesota. And without really understanding and knowing English and out there, and I know this firsthand from meeting a lot of the survivors in out there, and wondering, what really is about Minnesota? What is really going on? And how did you get here? And really wanting to know the origin of individuals. And it was this one, elder man. He's passed on since, not told the story of, he met his wife there, and he lived in Little Falls and this stuff. And he was one of those children that it came from Europe, and his parents didn't make it, and his older sister had tuberculosis, and so they tagged her, and the other ones cleared after he lived on the island for almost a year, and then they shipped him over. And he tells a story. He was supposed to be going towards California, out to the west. He went, and he misunderstood it because he didn't know English, and all he heard was Midwest. He knew the word west, so he boarded on that one. So a lot of his family went out there, and he came out here alone with the other ones, and he was older. And he tells this beautiful story, and he also tells of that he also had a speech impairment, and who befriended him were the Native Americans. And they're the ones that where he more or less learned how that he thought was speaking English, but he was speaking Dakota. So he made his journey, and like we're laughing, he made it so humorous, and he made something so horrifically sad into something with an abundance of happiness. Is that, and his family is flourishing. He met his wife there, they had their children, and so on and so on, and they built this beautiful life. So he doesn't speak about an origin of, you Indians or you white people, or he doesn't speak of that. He just speaks of some gratitude, which I found to be extremely welcoming. And and I was only supposed to be there like the afternoon and this stuff, and meetings and this stuff and that there. And I ended up, going and getting myself a motel room and going back and having breakfast and visiting with him for a little bit longer. And then, we wanted to leave before the day started to darken. So that conversation stayed with me, and that was like about, I don't know, it's over 3 decades ago. It was maybe even 4 decades ago. It was a while ago that it made me look at the world a little bit more, because he also reminded me of my father, because that's the way my father was. My father was never a person made up of identifying people as color. He identified them as, here comes the neighbor, somebody's coming in, and he, if you ever read any of my writings in that there, it's pretty much the memory of my father and my grandfather and how they taught us to look at the world. They taught us to enjoy the world and not judge the world. So when you ever find something that brings you so angry, that he'd always say, that's a wisdom lesson. That's Creator giving you a wisdom lesson for you to try to figure out. You need to step back and really think about it, because what you don't want them to do is to pull you into their trap. You step away from that. So, when all of this was going on, then the American Indian movement started happening and this stuff and that there. And from the American Indian movement that was going on, I mean, it was ABCs of even trying to get into the educational world, of having them trying to fight for just the children. First of all, they wanted to kill the Indian to save the man and to know their way. But when, as soon as you knew their way, then they tried to kill you. Well, you can't win for losing, right? So you had to really think about, we really need to go back into who we are as individuals. And it's not so much as who you are, where your anger's from, who's right and who's wrong in that there. As we have to look at, what was the interruption from the time you took that first breath coming in here? From the time prior to that, when you were swimming in the waters of the womb of your mother and getting the download of memory, into feeling the warmth of the fire when you stepped into this world and planting your feet, and nourishing off from Mother Earth, we all call home. There are four elements. Everything on this planet is made up of these four elements. And those four elements shows no prejudice to anyone, anything. That's it. That you take one of them away, none of us are going to survive. So I've always been in pretty much the I don't want to say protection, because I think sometimes when people say they're going to protect in a manner of protecting the environment, it's kind of, I want to say befriending and walking with the environment as we should be walking with one another. Because we can't be locked into the grandiose thinking is that I'm a little bit better than you and I can do it a little, life was not meant to be that way. And people don't realize that life is so short here. People say, you're only saying that because you're old. And I thought, well, you got to define what old is to me. Some people can live to be 100. People may have the intelligence of a 100-year-old and pass away when they're 17. I said, so you can't really step into another person's world. And that's where part of the saying goes, that saying, walk a mile in my shoes or my moccasins, before you move forward. So there was all these cliches through the past and out there that had some depth of meaning, right? And so when you look at Minnesota right now, because from AIM and everything else that's happening to just trying to survive life, is then Standing Rock happened. If Standing Rock happened, Vietnam, something always, there has to be a menace that happens to be happening around the world. And you kind of have to start looking back when you're stepping back and you're kind of thinking about, all right, let's be honest, there are naughty ones in out there. And who are the ones that are holding the strings to all the marionette puppets that are going crazy within this chaos? So when you step back and you start looking at it in that there, then that's when you have to figure out, what this diversion is. My father would always say, when somebody always strikes up such horrific horrors or such fear in people, it's like covering your eyes and you're not supposed to see real what's happening. So yeah, but in the meantime, we're all humans. Yeah, we all feel anger, especially when we see something. The foolishness, my gosh, when you watch TV and this stuff, four or five men pulling a woman out of a car and you can see knives in it, they're cutting things off and out there and going crazy and out there. So again, you can look at four or five different associated stories back to their past and how this atomic bomb happened with this woman. And it even gets even scarier because it's a crime. It's against humanity. I mean, you can do the ABCs of all the negativeness of why it's so wrong. But then you have to really look at, that's really not what's making me mad. What's really making me mad is who's holding the strings to the marionette and what is going on? And if we live in this world that we have to abide by, why don't they have to abide by? And so you start playing tug of war with feelings. And then we have to sit down and say, wait a minute here. Okay. It's okay to have your feelings. It's okay to stand up. It's okay to say, this is wrong and we don't want to prove what's going on. It's okay to be a good neighbor. You have to stand up and be a good neighbor. You have to say this is wrong, because the ones that are out there right now where I wish I would be in this minus 45, 50, wind chill walking, to the Target Center to get in there to be with community and to be with the ones that are standing, not so much as for justice, they're standing there for the rights and freedom. They're standing there because they're saying this, we're known as Minnesota nice. Even when we get real crabby and mean, we're pretty nice about this. It's to the point. We move on. And we can get over things, whatever it may be.
I'm
Go ahead.
gonna take a minute here to let our listeners know that this is Changing the Narrative. I'm Dina Eccles, and I'm having a delightful listen to Mary Lyons, who's a great grandmother and Ojibwe elder. When I asked you for your biography, and you said humanitarian, author, of course, and the other things, and then you said humanitarian, I thought, oh, yeah, this is, I can relate to this. I can feel this. And everything that you've said to this point has just been like, just taking it in, just like drinking it in. So important because we need this now. So I just want to welcome everybody who's listening, let you know the course of the this time we have together, and I'll turn it back over to you, Mary.
Oh, thank you once again.
Minnesota nice, I think you were saying.
Yeah, well, I think everybody's nice, but we're pretty much, tagged up marketing as Minnesota nice and out there, because I think your community builds character, and it comes from the original. Like I say, Minnesota, it was the majority was the Dakota people's land, and the push came, the Ojibwes came. Had a little conflict there, but we got along and out there. So we share the state, but by rights we're on Dakota land, and I have to acknowledge that. And we also have 11 tribes here. We have seven Ojibwe tribes that are called Minnesota Chippewa tribes, and we also have the four Lower Sioux tribes in that here. So the state is made up of 11 tribes, but it's also a melting pot. Back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and that there were a lot of the tribes and this stuff congregated in that there from relocation and everything that's happening. So we're made up of many, many tribes and many natives that are not from our tribes here reside here, and they've resided here generation after generation, and we've mixed in with each other's tribes and that there. So we are of abundance. And so, having said that, another thing I think it was really important that is we had embraced a lot of the Mexicans, a lot of the other tribes in Canada and out there. And there's just, I don't know, that maybe that's how they call it, Minnesota nice. I mean, it's very rare to find really a full blood in anybody in this stuff where you can say, oh, when somebody goes, oh, there's this white family over there. We're like, no, I mean, that language was brought to us, from the outside because they wanted to herd us in one area, and they needed to identify you cannot be within the white. So that came from a supremacist mentality and that there of color separation. I love history, by the way.
I see that. I see that.
So, and what you really have to think about is when you think about the past and how it plays in today. You really can't mimic their behaviors because if you mimic their behaviors in a sense that you're acting more foolish than them, then that might mean some of your characteristics from maybe your father, your grandfather, your mother, somebody in times past may have had that amount of prejudice in them. And you can't even say it may be a prejudice against a person because a person can't be that powerful over you. You have the free will to move and to leave or whatever it may be. But a lot of people say, no, they have control over me. It means they surrendered their power to them. And when
Correct.
you take back your power, you become very powerful. And this is where I'm at, because, I do work with Women of Wobriety International. Sobriety is very important to me, and because I know what alcohol and drugs have done to people, have done to communities, just has done to now. You can look at the reflection right now of how society has been birthed from alcohol. If a fetus doesn't have something so pure within the womb to grow from and out there, they might be shortchanged in one area when they are starting to grow and it comes up with a disability. So, and we got to remember too, alcohol is a very legal drug and it's one of the most damaging within the world. So we also have to look at some of that behaviors that are introduced within such things as what's happening now, because who in their right mind acts like that? As soon as that red flag comes up and you say that, my God, how could they even let this going on? The first time even way before then, my first thing was impeach, prison, rehab, something, right? And how can this be happening? And you just kind of look at it, and your mind can probably go into so many different scripts of scenarios of where this is going, what this is coming from. But the thing is, you have to reel yourself back in. You have to put yourself back on your platform, and you have to stand within your own reality and not spend so much time within a space where you shouldn't be in. All you need to know is, what's going on isn't right, and if I witness harm on my neighbor, I'm going to help my neighbor. I also have the choice to stand back and stay away, however it may be. You have a choice in the matter. But the reality is, if you do not say anything, you're going to be feeding the martyr more strength than anything else. So my father would say, if you feel you can't, he'd never say conquer, but he'd say, if you can never meet a person eye to eye and out there, you need to stop cutting off your own feet, your own legs and this stuff, or whatever it is. He'd never give us the correct answers we were seeking. He'd always give us puzzles, because we had to figure it out.
Yeah,
And
good.
he never said, I'm going to teach you something. He'd always say to me, I'm going to share with you. Because he'd always say, when somebody tells you they're going to teach you something, they're telling you they're above you and you're really not worthy. And it always comes out a negative thing. But if they say, well, I'd like to share something with you, means they're going to gift you something that's up to you if you want to take it. But if I'm going to teach you something, it's going to be their way. So he says, I always remember that. So, having to look at what is going on and the actual feeling and the temperature of where we're at. Just like in Standing Rock, when everything started to get so heating and the vets were coming and they were gonna, go across over there and they were gonna hoo-ha and whatever and tell them what's right in this stuff. When all the elders and this stuff, we prayed because we were fighting for the rights of nature and the rights of the water. And so when we prayed to Creator, it started snowing. It was sleeting and
I
it became one
remember.
of the worst one. And it stopped the event that we've seen bloodshed that could have happened if it wouldn't have. So when you believe and receive and you really think about it, we always say there's signs all around you, right? And even right now, you could pray. And again, what has happened? The elements knows how to calm a situation like today. Some things are happening and people are going to do this and people are going to do that. But, who's going to run and carry on, within this weather temperature? They could probably do it for maybe about a fourth of a block and then they'd turn into a statue.
Popsicle.
It's cool. But I think they can still calm and have you really think about and passionate. And like I said, I'm so envious of not being within the community there and hearing it. And I think it's just being, it's kind of like sitting at a table with all your family and friends in out there and just really having a wonderful a meal of food for thought and supporting one another. It's kind of like you don't have money to buy all the presents the one child likes, but what you can do is bring a bunch of joy to them and make them feel really happy because you showed up. Right? When you think within that of community, that's the power. And the power of family and people, we can still have our differences. After everything's gone, we can go back and be crabby with one another. But boy, if you come into our community again, we're gonna come back here, that's my arguing partner, but I need to save my arguing partner. You come back because it's just who we are. And I believe that's just who we have been, who we are from generation after generation after generation after generation. And I like to stay within that comfort zone because I even teach my daughters and my grandchildren, I only got one great granddaughter, to I shouldn't have to tell them this is the way you're going to be. I like to see and hear people say, oh my gosh, you got a great granddaughter. Your granddaughter's nice because she mimics our behavior. She was being really bad, I'd be very disappointed. So I think, who we are here is a threat. The dynamics of happiness and unity and this Minnesota nice, and I don't care what they say. I love our Governor Walz and people that just bash him and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, you go up and do this job. That's a tough spot to be in. You're constantly up there dodging all these knives being thrown at you, and you're the target. And I said, he's doing it because he's got a whole bunch of other people that he's there. Both our mayors and this stuff are really taking, a real toughness. We may not have to agree with them. But the thing is, we don't have to mirror childlike behaviors as if we were in a sandbox and we're bullying one individual that might be handicapped.
So important what you're
But
saying right now. So important. I totally agree. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because those voices, your voice, I think, needs to be amplified and needs to be given a chance to be heard. That's why I call it changing the narrative, because the narrative has always been about top-down power, power in general, that power is external. And I don't think that that's true. I think that power is within us and
Absolutely.
the power of community, like you were talking about. And I knew you were going to just like bring it on home. So I'm really, really grateful for this. Yeah, Minnesota is really under attack. I think that was so important what you said about they're attacking because, or the attack is coming. I don't even like to say they, because they're that of the humanity that's there, because of the culture that's there of caring for one another, and that's why the other thing is this is going to be shared in Wisconsin because we're right there with you. We have 11, I believe, tribes as well, and we have a lot of communities that that understand community, that that care for one another. And I could see that this thing is contagious. This ill will is contagious. So, thank you so much for your honesty, really, your honesty for what you who you've been and who you will continue to be. It's really appreciated. And I'm not interrupting you. Please carry on. I just wanted to tell you.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I appreciate it. Sometimes, it's like I never go into it wanting people to ride the same wave as me. Because sometimes I have to jump on their wave when I'm tired of swimming, And it's like I'm so proud of the events that are happening. And like someone had said to me, I'm not a church-going person. First of all, I'm a Dewan, and that's who I am within my religion, but I have nothing, about any, whatever your practice is just fine with me. It's wonderful in this stuff because we have a variety of how we meet the greater goodness, right? So having said that, Nat, there, when I am with a lot of the spiritual leaders in that there, I feel I'm in this big, beautiful coloring book, and it's not a coloring book of what their skin color is. It's a coloring book of beauty of all the landscapes they bring in and just everything else that they bring, whatever their beauty within their stories and the stuff that comes in. Because that's what builds a beautiful imagination. And that beautiful imagination is what just gives you this abundance, that aura that just makes you so happy, right? And what is more powerful than being happy is love. And knowing the power of love, not lust, but the unconditional love, because you got to remember every time we have. Like even courage has a center balance. You have the courage to say, no, I don't want to fight. You also have the courage to say, I am going to march, but I'm going to come back into that center of holding that space of that being equal So how you walk within the space, and like I said, being an earthier, our spirit, everything in this planet has a spirit, right? So taking care of your spirit and staying in that balance and this stuff just creates a happiness and a joy in a person that can radiate to somebody else, that may need it and may wish they had that in their life, but yet it introduces a feeling of joy to them that there is a possibility. And it's not even a possibility if they can have it. It's a memory that's in them that they can regrow that happiness again. So that's where you start helping those individuals regrow that wonderful power. And that's a threat to a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's a threat to, you can see it in Minnesota now. You can turn the news on and everybody's talking in out there. And that beautiful woman that was slain, the truth is the truth, no matter how you look at it. And for somebody to say something different becomes a diversion. And within that diversion, oh my gosh, people go, God, if a black person did this or if an Indian person, I think if any person did it, does it really determine the color of them out there? What made this thing different is they were given a uniform and you put it on and you're going to do as I say, and you can, I'm going to have you do it and it better get done. So I don't know how somebody can live with that. I really don't, but can you imagine the character of that individual, what their life was before when they go, oh, I got a fine life. Now you can tell within their energy of how they responded out there that no, you didn't. I'm so sorry you didn't get to experience, especially our seven teachings, which are teachings all over the world, is that I have to say my prayer, as you say, you never attack the person, attack the darkness in the person. So the spirit awakes. And what to be angry at is don't be angry at the individual, be angry at that darkness that's in them and around them, and show your power for them to awaken, for you to move forward. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally, totally. I have to tell you, when you were talking early on about what can happen when a baby is still in the mother, my mom ate hot peppers. She craved hot peppers. And I always think that's sort of what gave me a little bit of spark, you know? I take it. And so I think a lot of times about Rumpelstiltskin, right? Taking straw and turning it into gold. So taking whatever has harmed us, whatever has come, but to find ways to allow it to change and let it become strength. And more, that's, I'm like, I'm so glad you ate those hot peppers, Mom, because I needed it, So I love the way you're framing this. I think it's, again, really, really important for people to hear. Because we don't need to just feed more hate. We don't need to feed more division. Somehow we need to, I try to come back to my humanity and just respect that and trust that. Trust it, that seed of good will emerge, can and will emerge. So thank you again. So what else can we talk about?
I think that you really hit on a spot here because the power to have control, the power to have control. And when a person has a power to have such control, usually has they have something greater to hide. Because when you have an abundance of foolishness, you really have a depth of shame that you will safeguard probably until the day you die. And to the wisdom keepers, this is very sad because we know their spirit's asleep and there's a child in there that is not having the ability to grow up and to feel these gifts that Creator allowed us to have, the abundance of love and courage and, smelling the beauty of, your relatives, the flowers, or just really nourish people go, oh, that's just fictional. No, we got to remember for For thousands of years, all of us lived that way. It was just in the last 150 years, especially within this part of the world, where we went, artificially crazy. We went from using our feet walking to running to the wheel to the cars, and so on and so on, and having, remote huts and this stuff, and having solid base homes to high rises and whatever it may be, and even to the things is the growth of need was so immensely poured on us that I'm very fortunate that I have these memories of living on a dirt floor and people going, "You're poor." I wasn't poor, I was very happy. We were very rich in family. We knew what the comforts were all the way up until where I'm at now. To this day, I don't never use a dishwasher. My daughters don't use dishwasher. My granddaughters don't. My great granddaughter, you wash. That's something. Isn't they don't have to, but they hear my stories. I can remember my mom washing or my grandparents washing dishes, and we always had conversations around that sink in out there. So it was a unity of family. It wasn't you were poor and you can't afford this, and
Get it done in a hurry. Get it everything.
right. And our grocery stores were the forest or the rivers or, and our playgrounds where you didn't have to go pay a lot of money to go to a gym in that there to look like this. The fitness was the power of running in the forest and playing, and we didn't have to have telephones. We had to have good neighbors to say, "Hey, will you tell Tommy he needs to come home now?" And they'll say, "Tommy, you're supposed to go home." And anyways, by the time it gets to Tommy a mile away and this stuff, say, "Oh, Tommy, if you don't get home, you're gonna get a dirty licking." I mean, they'll always add some humor on it, and you'll see poor little Tommy running all the way home when the question was, and like for me, they used to do that to me all the time. That's why I could bring this memory up, because my father used to always wanted to know, "Oh, did you have any lunch?" Having a good time to run home thinking I'm gonna get dirty licking, but it was humor in the end. And and I said, "You're a liar," and it just echoed within our township, humor of laughter and this stuff and that there. But everybody seemed to know within community where everybody was at. And unfortunately now, this memory still arises because we have the magic of the whistle to alert. Now we have the technology on our phones to spot people and out there. We have the technologies of the phone to say, "If you're not going to listen to my word, this is the truth that's on camera." But the thing is, we're starting to have to prove more of ourselves than the value of what our word is saying, "Somebody harmed me." Prove it. You've got to have 10 proofs. And this is where we're at now. So these are the realities. The fact is, we have poor leadership. It stems down to that. Everybody becomes a bad parent or a bad friend. It's just not saying this is one person. We've all experienced this, but sometimes an individual experiencing that badness and they don't know how to get back in the middle to center themselves in that there. And sometimes that's when they would say, "You got to go stand in the corner and think about it," And I think, that corner, we need to put these individuals in for them to think about what is happening, and the harmfulness about them. We need to be back to community because this land base was built on it. And it drives Indigenous people crazy when they go, "Send back the immigrants." And we're saying, "Pack your clothes. I'll lend you a suitcase. I will pay for your Uber, to get to where you need to get out of there." But the sadness hurts, though, as I'll finish this with this. The sadness is they don't know their home origins.
Right.
And
That's
that saddens me because they don't know the pathways of their ancestral footsteps and the struggles they did for them to be in these positions today.
right. I so appreciate that. And I have to take a minute to tell people who are listening that this is Changing the Narrative, and we're here at the WDRT studios in Viroqua. And I'm Dina Eccles, and my guest is Mary Lyons, Ojibwe elder, fabulous storyteller, wisdom keeper, and now my friend, for sure. We said a little bit before that, We brought up the word shame. And that is something that I've realized in my life is such a problem, because shame is the thing that keeps people from their willingness to expose themselves, their willingness to grow. You know, like my family, again, they were uprooted from Italy because of money, blah, blah, blah. And I can see in the storyline of my life how they've tried to leave there. My grandmother raised me from the garden. Okay. I would eat right straight from the garden. She had chickens. You know, she made soup. She made her own bread in an outdoor clay oven. That was what I understood. And when she was gone, and I watched the garden shrink, and I watched the cans of food come out, and I watched the hurriedness of things, and I saw this try to be like, quite frankly, white people. That was the thing, because they were Italian. They were not, at that time, not considered really white. And so that thing of shame starts to creep in. And I saw that. And luckily, I had also a very good father. And he would always intercede. He was, I don't know, he was mixed of who God only knows what all he was, his ancestry. But his heart, he always stood up for me. And he would always just say, you know, be the person that you are. Even when we disagreed on things like the Vietnam War or whatever, he would always have that openness to it. And he gave me a lot of strength in that way. And it allowed me to go beyond the shame. And that is so important, I think. People need to, because we have these histories. Anyway, it triggered in me that this is something that we're all up against, all of us, because we're all displaced people, really.
Well, the thing is, we're not really all displaced. Everybody's address is Mother Earth.
Ah, I love that.
Their home. This is
Yeah.
our home. And you are a gardener, and you were selected to be a gardener of this particular area on this place on Mother Earth. And you were to be familiarized with her plants, her water, to be good guardians, not only good gardens, good relatives, and the stuff within those arenas and that there, because you don't have the ability to know everything that is happening around the world. That's where conversation and interest in the stuff that comes in. And that's the extension of love, are those loving hugs from other places and that there. Because if you don't learn how to take care of your homeland gardens and that there, how do you expect your future to survive? And we say this with such a powerful humbleness. I say that because my father used to say, you know, if somebody comes into your house uninvited, there's something that they want. And then they can turn around and lie to you and say, oh, I thought you told me to come in, or the door was open. They always have a motive. And that can be coming into somebody's country. That can even be for you going into the lake. If you want to go, he always taught us, if you're going to go jump in the water and out there, you have to say a slight prayer and this stuff. You have to say to all those water relatives in this area, you know, I would like to come into your territory. Do you mind me if I'm coming in to swim? Always, since we were little, you go into the forest and that's there, you talk to the trees and that's there, and you say, can I come into your, more or less, their living space, their living room, because I want to come play. You speak to who's around you with getting permission as being a good neighbor. And it was something that was bred in myself. It was bred in him. And the thing is, what's remarkable, my father was born in 1888 or 89. We're not really certain on it. And his mother, which I never met because she was 52 when she had him, which was a normal age to be having children because of them being healthy. And
Yeah.
her mother was like 49 or 54, the range. She was born in the late 1700s. That's the only knowledge I have within part of my history, instead of all these choppiness and that there. My story is that. My story is how do you humble yourself? You know, and he would say, even to me at times, if you don't understand something, Creator might give you a lesson that you may have to walk down this dark alley so you understand, but you got to remember you carry the light in you for you to come back. And when you come back, make sure you bring a friend with you. or a relative with you when you come back out of the dark. He would talk in rhymes like that, where now, I went through 10 years of in my life of a menace and walked down that dark alley. People go, "Oh, you speak a lot about sobriety." Well, I'm sober. There was a time when I wasn't, and they share things like that, and it's like, sometimes you have to walk in a darkness to see part of that darkness of that manipulation and everything in there. But you have to walk in there. When you go in there, we always say you're never alone. You have your ancestors in you and they're all around you. So you have your protections and this stuff. And it's just not indigenous people. This is everyone.
Agreed.
Because this is the biology of who we are, right? And we have this memory base or whatever it is. We got this unique, like the original computers are our mind and having this wonderful bits of memory and stored memory that's kind of forgotten. And some people will even kind of identify. We have a lot of safes in our heads, and sometimes we forget the combinations to it. But every now and then we'll remember, or sometimes the door will open up by itself. These memories will
Yeah.
surrender themselves. But like I said, in this day and age and this stuff, yeah, it's going to be really easy to jump into the fire with everybody. But if there's no hands to pull them out or put the fire extinguisher on her, then I don't think we're any better than the ones that created the fire. So I think that's the thing of saying about being a good neighbor. Sometimes I might have to, take the big hit in this stuff and that there, just so I can help 10 or 12 people here. I may get my car rammed into if I happen to go get groceries and I want to deliver food. I may take an abundance. I may take some heavy hits of somebody calling out me, you old dirty, black, and they may say some profanities to me and this stuff. And the first thing I'm thinking about is I have to close my eyes and say a prayer for them. I have to say a prayer to the darkness for the darkness to awake in order to hold my anger in. Because I got to remember, my anger isn't for them. I've got to use this energy to do the task that I wanted to do and make sure I achieve it that way, that I won't surrender to their silliness. I won't jump in that sandbox of naughtiness of where they're at. So, yeah, it's very difficult at times in that there, but I have to remember when a lot of us elders and this stuff will go into community. I went in last week and this stuff down at the coffee ground shop to support my brother Chief Warble Looking Horse, him and his beloved and some other elders that came there so they could say prayer and to make sure that they knew we were with them and we were saying prayers for them. And I it made me sad because it was like COVID. There was nobody around. And the ones that were around was kind of like somebody had said, "Oh, it's the cowboys and Indians again." And I said, "No, it's the dark and the light. We need to find the medium of it. We need to stop identifying. We have to stop using characteristics that are like kindling that will support the fire of anger. We have to see it. It is. It's hurt people hurting people. But the reason why we're standing here is because we don't believe in their naughtiness. We don't believe in their meanness. We don't believe in them harming our neighbors. I know a lot of people that can be very angry at another culture and this stuff, but they see harm to them, they jump right in there and they're helping them. So I think throughout time here, our expressions got lost in translation. Instead of saying, "I'm so angry at you because you did this," they just said, "Oh God, I just can't stand you." They cover the whole thing instead of finding the original thing that's happiness. And then they deprive themselves of all the goodness that they had with them at that one particular time. They close themselves in that little container and they end up being lonely. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And so you're offering us in all of this different ways of seeing, you're offering a way out. I studied Navajo weaving with Navajo people, and it was reminding me of that. And you would have the upright loom, and you as you would weave, You always would have a way out, you know. That was such an important thing, and it stuck with me. You know, it's like, what is my way out? I don't want to carry anger. I don't, you know, my cup only has so much room. What will I put in it? You know, and what do I want to carry? And what will I, when I leave here, this place, this beautiful place that I've been given to exist on, what will I carry with me? You know, so you've in this course of this time that we've spent together, you've offered wonderful analogies and considerations of how we can find our way out. So, and I deeply appreciate it. I think we're kind of coming towards the end of our time for this show, but hopefully not between you and I. I would love to carry on more conversations, hopefully in person this next time. Is there any last thing that you would like to say?
I would say stand within your own truth, stand within your own power. It's okay to be upset, but make sure you know what you're upset at. Approach within that power, you know, and I think the best intimidation you can give somebody that is being so naughty is a calmness. It's because if you're not looking like they're looking and they, you know, then you start cutting those strings to those marionettes. You're no longer those little dolls that are marching around like them. And the ones that are being naughty, I think they need to go in the corner and sit down and really think about what they're doing and out there. And there is only one word I think that you can really say. And I really hate using this word, but in layman's terms of what the general understanding is we need to impeach. I'm sorry, but the
No,
thing
I'll be.
is, if it was my son or somebody else in this stuff, I wouldn't tolerate it. It's that, you know, you can't eat money, you can't swim in oil, you know, you can't choke on such a toxins if you're going to destroy the air, you know, you can't expect to be happy if all you're doing is creating menace. And it's time for you to step down, and I hope that they would do it on their own. But the power of the people is to say, is you need to be in a timeout.
Yeah,
You
time out. I'm with you.
yeah, you need to be in a timeout. And you need to think about everything that you've done. And you've got to remember, we have no control over your happiness, you do. But what we do have control over is our own happiness, and you're forbidding us to live that way. So I want to say stand with Minnesota, because we're still Minnesota nice no matter how you look at it. It's bred from my ancestors. It's bred from the Dakota ancestors. It's just from the bones that have been in the ground prior to any of us being here. So we walk as one. We breathe the same air. We drink the same water. We feel the same heat, and we all reside on one address, and it's called Earth. So I want to thank you for having me on.
Oh, amen. I'm not a religious person, but I will use that. Thank you so much, Mary Lyons. And we'll share how people can find you. And this has been Changing the Narrative with Dina Eccles at the studios of WDRT. I'm so very grateful. I'm so grateful for all of you who've listened. And please share this because these are the words that need to consume us now. This is the fuel that we need to take in. So thank you all very much. Thanks to Kelly Koppish, my engineer, and see you all soon.